This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. When we left off with World War II tank commander Charles Jennings, he was all bandaged up from the wounds he suffered at the outset of the Battle of the Bulge, and he was hiding under a table on Christmas Day while German planes bombed and strafed outside. And even once you finally made it to a hospital, that wasn't even a remotely safe place to be.
I was taken back to a place where there was a big civilian hospital. I was put into the hospital there. It was several stories high, kind of a U-shaped building. And the Germans then were dropping bombs and firing. What we found out were V1 rockets, and one or more of them landed in the middle of this hospital, the U-shaped hospital, and blew out the windows. We started getting little blood spots on us because the little pieces of glass were blowing all around us and getting into our skin. And so we thought, well, we're not through with this yet, apparently. So I got patched up there and went to another hospital. And they were bombing then with those V2 rockets, which were more deadly. They had a motor on them, and they fly overhead, and all of a sudden the motor would stop, and you knew then that the bomb was coming down. Anyway, I got into Paris. Of course, I wanted to go to Paris, but get in there with a couple of other guys, all bandaged up and half cast on, and we got to go into Paris and go in the Champs-Élysées and Eiffel Tower and all those places, but didn't want to stay because, and this is a kind of a disgusting part, but there were Frenchmen on every street corner beckoning to come with them, and they were taking guys somewhere where there were prostitutes. And with a half cast on, and my buddy who had an arm out like that with a cast, holding his arm out, and we still had our guns. They let us keep our pistols. We didn't want any part of all that was going on. Stayed in Paris only a couple of days and decided this isn't anything like we dreamed Paris was going to be. So we caught the trucks and planes out to the Bourget field and got back to England. And then it was just a matter of waiting in the hospital for transportation back home.
Well, you described being hit in the chest and that it just rearranged some bones and you had shrapnel to pick out and all that. But obviously these injuries were serious enough that the Army gave you a discharge form. I don't want to shortchange the extent of what you went through. Did it limit what you were able to do physically? Was there a lot of pain involved? What was it like for you?
Yes, but it didn't limit much because it was right here in the middle of my chest and I was able to move everything, you know, and it didn't seem like anything other than bandage and stuff in my chest. And they discharged me before the war was over.
How did you feel about that?
Well, I certainly wasn't going to raise any fuss about getting sent out because I'd had enough. But the war was still going on and I felt a little guilty about that, but 2 years later, after the medics said that I was all free of this shrapnel and stuff, I went to enlist in the Army, and they accepted me. I, at the time, was working. I quit my job, and I had married somewhere in this history. I had got married.
In fact, you had a daughter born while you were over there, right?
Yes, and when they took me, they said it was okay, I'd go in as a private. Well, which was fine. I just wanted to get back in.
Why'd you want to get back in so bad?
I liked the Army. I wasn't crazy of all that stuff that was flying around, but I liked being in the Army. I liked the discipline and the regimentation of the thing. But got to the railroad station to be taken back to Fort Devens, Massachusetts, and this major came along calling my name. He used a few well-chosen words telling me what he thought of me because he said, you're not even eligible to get back in. You've been in already. And yet you've had enough. So they took me back, and I had to go back and very sheepishly admit they wouldn't take me, you know. And that was the extent of my brilliant military career. There are things that I had experienced that I thought were wonderful. And if you got a few minutes, just one particular part of it. In Holland, we went into a little town. Holland has hills and mountains and things, you know. It's not like people think it is, all ice skaters everywhere. But they had a coal mine, and those of us who were officers there were invited to come and take showers in their big coal mine building. Of course, we took advantage of that. There was a man there that was called a traitor because he had worked so closely with the Germans all the time they were there. Turned out that he was all the time he training these young men. He had permission from the Germans to form like Boy Scouts, and they were hiking all over the area in Holland, and they were making maps. Every time they'd find a pillbox or anything that the Germans had there, why, they had it all mapped out of where they were. When we got there, this man was able to just turn all this information over to our army, and it helped a lot. I mean, they were able to wipe out a lot of emplacements there, but that's one part of the whole experience that I remembered so well, was this man who was a graduate of the University of Texas and just had worked so closely, though, with the Germans, because he was operating the coal mine and making sure they're doing the right thing for the Germans. But he was actually making all these maps and things, and it helped us tremendously.
Seems like that took a lot of guts to do something like that on his part, huh?
It had to. I mean, how can you even imagine what it was like to be surrounded with all these enemy, and yet they thought that you were part of what they wanted? I don't know how the man was able to do this. Never heard his name, but I think he was one of the greatest heroes of the war.
Certainly risked his life, no doubt. And I'm sure over the years, as you've reflected, you realize that you risked your life quite a bit in this war. And there are a couple times where it came close to being the end of your life over there. When you look back on everything you went through and the danger that you were in, the fate that you saw befall so many of your fellow Americans over there, what are you most thankful for? What are you most proud of all these years later?
Most proud of? I don't really know. Never thought much about being proud of anything, except that I was able to tell people about it. And there are so many thousands of guys that never got to tell anybody anything. I was one of the lucky people who got through it and never really felt that I had done all that I could have done, you know, if I stayed a while, you know.
Did you feel then, or do you feel now, when you think about how close you came to not coming home, do you feel like someone was looking out for you, or someone intervened on your behalf? How do you make sense of that?
Believe it or not, at the time I was in the Army all the time, I didn't believe in anything. Anything religious, certainly. There were guys around me, they were praying or they were doing things with beads or whatever. And I thought, you know, what good's that going to do, you know, if a shell's coming your way, you're not going to stop it by what you're doing. And it wasn't until long after that, a few years after that, when I got out, I was convinced that there was some power or something that was greater than anything that I had. And maybe this is a strange part of a combat tale, but when I was home and I was living in the home with a widow and her children, she happened to be a member of the Church of Christ, which I had never heard of. And she didn't have a car and she had no way to get to church, so they met for Bible study at her house. And I sat in on the studies, and at first I thought, well, that's ridiculous, that could never be. But then I started getting questions in my mind, well, this is beginning to sound different. And if I had questions, I thought, would throw them. They didn't argue with me at all. They just opened their Bibles and said, read this. I had no argument for that. It was already there, you know. And so I became fully convinced that that was the right way to go. I became a member of the Church of Christ. A young preacher from Texas was doing evangelistic work, and he baptized me and became a good friend over the years, and many, many, many years. I actually decided to become a preacher myself, and I went to college. I was able to go under the GI Bill, of course. After a little over 3 years, I graduated, and I was then a preacher myself. And I was a preacher for about 20 years, started working with some small groups and actually organized a couple of small churches and so forth. But after that many years, I had also become a hospital administrator in the latter part of that, because preachers didn't get quite as enough money. So I had got a job in a hospital, and the administrator, after a number of months, says, well, I'm going to go on vacation. You take over. That was the beginning of my ability to be called an administrator and move on to other things. But after 20 years, I had to choose, really, because I got a lot of satisfaction in being able to see people coming to the hospital and receiving treatment and walking out healthy. I thought, well, that's really what I want to be a part of. So I didn't do any more full-time preaching. I just became an administrator and was able to go to 4 different hospitals over a period of 25 years. In the 3rd hospital, I took over as administrator. I met this lady. Her husband was a major in the Army, but he was a medical director of the hospital. So for 10 years, we worked together, and after I was no longer administrator, she and her husband came back into my life. He was very ill and eventually died, but we were friends and became more than that, and finally decided that I needed taken care of, so she took care of me for 21 years. I can't think of a better ending for any kind of a story. And believe me, it's not just a story. This is all true.
Well, I believe you, and I'm pretty sure our listeners do too. If you want to see a photo of Mr. Jennings and his wife Elaine, just get on Facebook and type in Hometown Heroes Radio. You'll find some photos of him as a 20-year-old tank commander too. He really didn't want to draw too much attention to it, but boy, did he have some close calls, and those injuries he suffered were pretty severe too. The Jennings live in Morro Bay. Next week will be just a short drive up the coast from there in Cayucas, where they're working hard to fix the iconic pier and where a 91-year-old can get pretty emotional about his time as a prisoner of war. That's what's coming up next time on Hometown Heroes. Thanks so much for tuning in today. I'm Paul Leffler, reminding you again that freedom is not free.